What's up, family? This is Swift Justice with Unheard Voices, OTCJ, coming to you live from Concrete Jungle. And listen, what I'm doing today is kind of a part two of yesterday. We had a brother on yesterday, and he shared his story about his incarceration and the experiences that he went through while he was incarcerated. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to bring in another brother, and we are going to call this brother by the name of Bob McNabb. And I'm going to wait for Bob McNabb to jump in on this live feed, and I am going to invite this brother in to come, and here he comes right now. I'm going to invite him in, and we're going to jump on this podcast, man, or this Facebook Live, and we're going to pretty much go freestyle, and we're going to talk. We ain't got no certain topics. We'll just see how the flow goes. And if you're watching this and you're listening, what I want you to do is throw your two cents in and ask your questions, because questions against answers, and answers actually strike more questions. So here's Brother Bob. Bob, how you doing this morning, bro?
I'm doing great, brother. Thank you for having me on.
Man, I appreciate you coming on, because what we got is the topics that we got going on across the nation dealing with the prisons and the judicial system is a huge and hot topic, man, and we got to keep pushing this topic to the fullest so that more people can get more involved and that they can turn around and start educating others as well. So, and like I told people that's going to be joining in or watching this, man, if you would share this live feed and let's make this topic go viral, man. Bob, man, I'm going to give you the floor, bro. And I've already introduced myself. Everybody knows me as Swift Justice, and they know when this blurred vision comes up who it is. So go right on ahead, man. You got the floor. Let's just talk. Let's chop it up about what you had going on and what you witnessed and what you are actually doing today as far as making a change in what you experienced.
Well, just let me start by saying that I started going into the prison system back in the early 1990s in the state of California. And what I experienced in there in the county jails and the Los Angeles County jails and other places like that is just a whole lot of inhumane abuse. A lot of officers flexing their muscle and utilizing their power in a non-productive, negative way. So basically they can assault you and beat you up and treat you like an animal, but if you bite back, next thing you know, you're faced with a criminal charge of assault and a police officer. That was my first experience inside of a jail. I was beaten and thrown into a mop closet and stripped naked just for putting my hands on a specific poster of John Wayne on the wall. And they always told you in there, don't mess with John Wayne. So I touched John Wayne, and that was all it took for them to beat on me. That was my first experience with the Los Angeles County Jail. Going up into the CDC, you know, I experienced a lot of just mass incarceration with no real solutions to help these guys do anything better with themselves. You know, prison in their mind is a place where they throw you to take you out of society, and they don't have any real interest in rehabilitating you regardless of what they tell the public. You, the taxpayers and the public, are basically investors in a business. That's what you are, pure and simple. You're not giving up tax dollars for something to really keep you safe. You're investing in a Band-Aid solution, because a lot of these men and women are going to be released, and most of the time they're released unprepared, and most of the time they're released dehumanized in a lot of ways and feeling less than and a lot more angry because of the brutal treatment that these brothers and sisters are going through right now. And that's why, you know, this man is on here doing what he's doing. He's taking a huge risk running with what he's doing from the inside of the belly of the beast. And he's exposing himself to possibly being physically assaulted or almost killed himself. And we know that to be true, right, Swift?
Yeah, that's very true, man. But, you know, that's the thing. We all have to find us a spot in our life, man, to the point of where we are going to be willing to sacrifice the ultimate sacrifice. And the sad part about that is, especially inside of the prison system, not many people are willing to sacrifice the ultimate sacrifice to see true change. And the sad part about that is if they are not willing to sacrifice and give up something of their own self, you're never going to see change, not true change, not within yourself and not within society, nor within the system that's corrupted. Man, I want to piggyback off of something that you just brought up about the assaults and stuff that you received and that you witnessed throughout your stay within California. Now, one of the things that my co-founder just recently brought to attention, man, and he brings this to my attention from a military background. Jesse Smith is a five-time veteran through the military, man, and he brought this to my attention. He says, you know, one of the things that we as civilians tend to do is hold accountable the criminal, but allow the ones holding the criminal accountable to run rampant with crime. Now, this brother right here brought that to my attention. He says, man, it's almost as if you do as I say, not as I do, syndrome throughout the prison system, not only here in Alabama, but as well as all over, especially like in California, what you described a while ago, man. And that is something that we here across the nation right now, as far as what we're doing with the prison strike 2018 and what's to come in 2019 and 2020, that's what we're doing. We are holding the system accountable. And that is the thing that if you're going to hate us for doing that, just know one thing. You're the one who taught us to be accountable because you held us accountable as taxpayers, just like Brother Bob said a while ago. It is you who are the investors in what we are doing. And you are the ones that are burning us to burn inside of us to make this accountability be seen by the public and be seen by society today. So if anybody's to blame, it's society to blame. You're the one who taught me to hold people accountable as well as myself accountable. But Bob, I want to throw something else. I just seen recently out in California that the DOC agencies out there are actually starting to mix the populations once again, especially, you know, dealing with California and the high gang activity that you have in the system. What do you think about them mixing the different gangs on into general population with one another?
Well, you know, my take on that is back in the early 2000s and the late 1990s, what they were doing is they were systematically removing several thousands of inmates out of the general population and deeming them a threat to the safety and security of the institution. And they were doing this because they were scooping up shot callers and they were scooping up foot soldiers, and this is how they thought they were going to disband the gangs. But what they really found was that you can't really disband something that's basically not like recruiting. You know, every time you enter the California prison system, you automatically run with your people because it's very racial over there and it's very racially segregated. It's not that the system segregates us, it's we choose to segregate each other. And that right there is a divide and conquer. So it makes it easy for them to, it made it easy for them to remove inmates out of the general population and put them into permanent SHU programs, indeterminate SHU programs, you know, due to validate you as a prison gang member, as a disruptive group member. So they were systematically scooping up Sureños, Norteños, Bloods, Crips, anybody. They already had taken the BGF, the Mexican Mafia, and the Aryan Brotherhood, and the Nuestra Familia off the yard earlier in the 90s. So then after that, they were just starting to take all their foot soldiers, and they were filling all these shoes up. They built Pelican Bay, I'm sure you heard of that prison, to accommodate all of these people after they filled up the Corcoran Shoe. And if anybody remembers a time in history, Corcoran Shoe is where they were staging the gladiator schools. So, you know, the gladiator matches where they were shooting inmates on these exercise yards. So then after they filled up Pelican Bay and filled up Corcoran, they started filling up the Tehachapi Shoe. When it got to the point to where it got to the attention of the courts, they deemed them to be unconstitutional. So they had to release all these people back out into general population. So they released a lot of these people and started releasing members of the BGF, the MA, and the AB, and the NF. back out into the general population on these level 4 yards as well. So then what happened is now what they're trying to do, and I believe they're doing it on purpose, is they're starting to try to mix what's called SNY and GP population inmates together. Now, an SNY is a sensitive needs yard inmate, an inmate who had PC'd up and took themselves off the yard, so they created all these sensitive needs prisons. Now they're just mixing and matching all of them together, and I believe that it's a recipe for disaster, and it's going to start getting violent over there as soon as all the political dust settles, because they were on a long food strike. There's a lot of litigation in the courts on shutting down the shoe programs over there. When all that dust settles, you know, these people in the CDC, they know that if they start mixing these two populations together, it's just a recipe for disaster. And I believe that that's their method to their madness. And it's crazy.
Well, let me ask you this.
Things work.
Let me ask you this, as far as, you know, you're speaking on the recipe for disaster and you're bringing attention to the California shoe. But, and we, anybody who follows the issues dealing with the prison system know that, you know, recently, a few years back, Oprah Winfrey did a episode dealing with the shoe and questions a whole lot of people who was on the shoe for many, many years, not just years, but decades by themselves. But let me ask you this. The recent 2018 prison strike has showed to be a whole lot of solidarity and unity, not only amongst prisons across the states of the United States, but as well as in California, because we have seen a lot of unity in California as well, talking about the hunger strikes and what went on over there in California. Now, we've seen a lot of progress, and we see a lot of legislation that's being placed upon in California and actually being moved on. We're not going to say that it's being moved on in a huge way, but do you think, in your opinion, being that you've been in this system out there in California, that they are systematically starting to try to bring chaos in the system so that they can turn around and have a foothold on saying, okay, we tried, but we still got these problems over here. Look at the violence. Look at how the rate of violence has gone up. And do you think that this is a way to disenfranchise the actual individuals who are actually putting together in California to actually be successful in these strikes that's going on in the nation?
I believe that everything that they do is calculated and with full knowledge. They understand what they're doing because they've been doing it for a long time. They're not stupid people. That's what I try to make it known to everybody, that the people that run our country are not stupid people. They may look like they do stupid things, but they're not stupid people. They're very, very highly intelligent people that collaborate and form these conspiracies together all across these justice departments in order to keep the chaos moving, and they'll do things, they'll throw little bones here and there, you know, in the way of, look, we're trying to do something, because you, as the investors, I don't like to call you taxpayers, you know, let's get that straight right now, you're investors, you are investing in a business, that's what you are doing,
right?
So you're investors, so when you invest in this business, you need to know, you need to want assurance that your investment is being well spent. So they'll put all these programs out there knowing that most people aren't going to participate in them, because you got all these prisons that are controlled by gangs and gang leaders, because I was a gang leader for a while myself, will instruct all of their members that you will not participate in any of these programs. You know, I did that for a long time, and I don't feel good about that. I feel, you know, very disappointed in myself for that. But they know that we're going to do this, and they don't care. They don't make things mandatory. They don't give incentives for people to get out sooner. They don't, you know, and they brew this chaos, and knowing that we're going to bite into it, because there's a lot of chiefs that don't want to stay on the same page with each other. So they want to brew this chaos so that they can get on TV and say, you know, you see everybody, they're animals. We need to lock them up and throw away the key. And that's real true, too, with all of this current criminal justice reform stuff. You got a lot of people out there that are trying to just open the floodgates and let everybody out early. And that's a good thing. It's a beautiful thing. But if you don't let people out prepared, it's going to be chaos when they get out into the streets, because They're not going to know how to deal with society, and they're going to be back into crime. And as we've seen in past circumstances, what will happen is they'll use that person as the person that gets out early. And if, let's say, he kills somebody or robs somebody, they're going to put him all over national news as a poster boy for why they want to lock us up forever and never give us any kind of reform.
Yeah, and you know, to piggyback off of what you're saying right there, I want to make a point for those who are viewing us. You know, a very good poster child, like in the state of Alabama recently, I think it was about 2 months ago, they released this brother by the name of Jimmy Spencer. And Jimmy Spencer was a nonviolent criminal. Now Jimmy Spencer has three capital murder cases on him. And including in that, this brother right here was caught up in the massive release process of what's going on with the Department of Justice in Alabama. Now, he was there again, a nonviolent offender, so they said he deemed him safe to be released. And they wasn't touching any of the violent offenders as far as letting the public know about this. But this man gets out. He actually gets out as a worse criminal because he's caught up in one of the state. Well, in Alabama, I don't know how many people that are listening know that Alabama is actually right now the most violent prison in the United States of America. So now he's caught up in the most violent prison in America as a nonviolent offender and released as a drug addict, and gets out and kills three people, one of those being a child. Now there are Alabama citizens are actually hollering, well, y'all are releasing all these people. You're not supposed to be doing that. Well, taxpayers, or better yet, investors, just like Brother Bob said a while ago, it was something that you invested in for decades now because of the overcrowding. It's not our fault. It is your fault because you haven't been holding the people who are supposed to be held accountable accountable. And that is what, again, I'm going to reemphasize once again, that's what we're doing here today. We are holding people accountable for their actions. The investors, the people that you hire to sit there and run these systems, not only here where I'm at, but as in California and across the nation, from the East Coast to the West Coast to the North to the South. Man, we have to address these things because this is not an isolated incident. This is not just something that's going on in South Carolina. This is not something that's going on in California. This is going on across the nation and is spreading across the world. So, man, Brother Bob, I want to ask you another question, man, when it comes to these. You kept on saying that the people running the system are not smart. I mean, not dumb, not dumb by no means. We know that they are highly intelligent and foresee the things that they're doing. Now, let me ask you a question. Why do you think that they systematically start releasing these individuals that are not prepared to be released? What purpose do you think, the intent do you think that they have in doing that themselves? Is it true? Do you believe that they in themselves actually know that these guys are going to come back to prison?
Oh, they most definitely know. I mean, they do workup sheets. Basically, they use in several different state systems and including the federal system. They use a system, like a point system, much like they score your points to determine what level of security you'll be going to. They also have a risk assessment of how recidivate, and usually they know that a lot of these people, they have a very high likelihood of recidivating, so they release them anyways, knowing that they're not gonna make it. So by not making it, they could basically keep their status quo going, and they could keep their quota up. Because, like I said, you, the investors, the tax-paying investors, don't understand that you actually, you know, when somebody commits a crime, the courts basically it's a debt. Here's another thing to consider. There's no actual, like, when people sell drugs, they're not actually, it's not actually a crime against an individual. It's a crime against the state, or against the county, or the people of the state. But prisons are debtor prisons. They're there to pay a debt for something, and that debt is paid in a way that is to redeem the individual and correct him in a way that he doesn't get out, or she doesn't get out and repeat the same behavior. That's why they're called the Department of Corrections. You got to understand a lot of these key words that they use: rehabilitation, reentry, corrections, Department of Corrections. Correction is to fix something that's broken, right? So The people that they put into prisons are broken, but they're not being corrected. They're not being rehabilitated because they're being thrown in a situation where it's just mass chaos. And the conditions are so harsh that it hardens these people's hearts. And you could take a simple nonviolent drug offender, put them into a prison for several years and turn them into a cold-blooded killer, because psychologically this person is destroyed. And that's the key word is what do we do to fix the problem at the reentry level? What do we do to rehabilitate these people's thinking? And that's what it is. It's every man or woman that's incarcerated in a prison is their thinking is messed up to begin with, because whatever led us to our criminal behavior, and I got to tell you that I'm no innocent person in prison. I mean, I did everything that I was convicted of. But what do we do to change the thinking? How do we get it to where these men and women can start thinking more rational, can start making better decisions, can start learning how to cope with the high demands of society? And it starts with society itself. Society needs to be more open-hearted. They need to stop with this, well, you did the crime, now you need to suffer. It's not about suffering, man. It's about correcting bad behavior. And if the bad behavior is not being corrected, then prisons are failing, bottom line. They're failing because the behavior is not being corrected. And if the behavior is not being corrected, then society itself is failing in its part and not holding them accountable for why they're not correcting the behavior. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, because it's brutal honesty and it's a truth that's like a smack to the face. But God damn it, you guys are investing in these businesses and they're not producing the dividends that you're looking to get, because they're not rehabilitating anybody, they're not correcting anybody's thinking, they're just warehousing a bunch of bodies, and then they're just kicking them back out into the street with a pat on the back and a good luck to you, and that's not it, because then these men and women get out, and they remember all of that crap that went on inside, and I've heard it time and time again, and I'm sure any of you that know a person that's been incarcerated, you've heard them say, it's too hard out here, I just want to go back. I just want to go back. It's too hard out here. Well, it's not too hard out here. It's easy out here if you know how to use your mind properly, if you know how to be as smart as they are. It's easy. But a lot of people don't know how to make it easy because they don't possess the proper tools to do that, because the system ain't exposing them to that. They're classifying, and another one they're doing that's wrong, they're starting to soundbite all this nonviolent criminals, nonviolent criminals, nonviolent criminals. And there's no such thing. There's no such thing as a nonviolent criminal. Me and Swift know, pure and simple, that there are nonviolent criminals that are in there that are just as dangerous as the next guy. Just because you have a drug crime doesn't mean you're a nonviolent criminal. That needs to be understood. It needs to be understood that nonviolent criminals and violent criminals are no different, man. And when you put them all together in the same facility, you've created a violent criminal in each and every one of them. And when they're in a situation on the streets to where life is dealing them a bad hand and they can't get it together and they don't know how to cope with what's going on around them, they might resort to drastic measures. And one of these people might have had to stab somebody on the prison yard to save themselves. And that survival instinct might kick in at any given moment, at any given time on the streets, because they're psychologically damaged, they're traumatized, and they might kill somebody. It's all chaos, and it's all these labels and sound bites and everything that you hear. Oh, we want to let all the nonviolent criminals out. Well, like you heard Swift say, they let a nonviolent criminal out. What did he do? He killed a bunch of people. So that just goes to show you right there that what we're saying, there's some validity to this, and that there needs to be a whole new way of thinking as far as criminality is concerned. You need to treat criminality as a symptom of an illness. And the only way that you're going to do that is by developing a successful strategy for reentry, and while also creating a condition where, if prisons are a place that you're taking people out of society because you deem them a risk to society, it doesn't need to be a place of barbarism and inhumane abuse, like what Swift is going through, like many of them other are going through in Alabama, South Carolina, Florida, California, all over the place. You need to make it as least brutal as possible, because that's how these gangs and the people that are really bad inside the system take control of our brothers and sisters, because they use the conditions around them. Like, look at, man, the system don't give a fuck about us, society don't care about us, so let's go harder than the paint, you know. And that's how they keep the foothold. But when you start you start allowing them to become more humane and more or less brutal and more therapeutic is the key word. When you start to make them become more therapeutic, yeah, that's what needs to happen in there. And that's what you and society need to do. You need to start demanding that your investment is spent properly, or start demanding that you no longer pay taxes to this criminal justice system. You're just like, I'm not paying taxes no more. Not if it's going to continue to brutalize these men and women and let them be released worse than they were when they went in. It's got to stop.
Right. You know what? I'm going to touch on something that you just touched on. You asked the question on what do we do to fix this. And for those who are watching, I want to make this point that what you see going across the nation right now with the 2018 prison strike, you've seen demands that were put out there. And these demands were orchestrated not by legal minds, not by lawyers, not by congresspeople, not by House of Representatives of these states. They were actually come up with by individuals in prison. And the thing about it is every last one of these demands are legitimate demands. And they're not asking for TVs. They're not asking for conjugal visits. They're not asking for what we call bullshit demands. They're asking for legitimate changes to see legitimate changes. Now, one of those demands is something that I harp on a bunch, because this is one of the things that I stand on 100%, and that is the 13th Amendment. First and foremost, the society has to retitle the individuals that you're looking at and talking about inside the prison system. Right now, by the United States Constitution 13th Amendment, I am not an inmate, I am not a convict, and Brother Bob is not an ex-convict, not an ex-inmate. He is an ex-slave, and I am a slave, according to the 13th Amendment. Now, throughout history, slaves have been looked at as less than animals. And you're going to have to stop looking at Swift Justice and all the other Swift Justices across the nation, which is 2.5 million other Swift Justices across the United States of America, as animals, and start looking at us as humans. Now, that's where the therapeutic issue that Brother Bob was bringing in right then and there. Now you start bringing in therapeutic instead of thugaputic, because right now, while you're watching these movies on Netflix or on HBO or Showtime or whatever about prison yards and stuff like that, you got this picture, this stereotype of what we do and how we are. But I'm going to tell you something. You got individuals across the nation right now that have banded together and mastermind and put together a strike, not once but twice, and going to be three and four and five times until we start seeing change and start getting the 13th Amendment exception clause removed, as well as the other nine demands that we have put through throughout not only the nation but each one of our states. Until we see those demands met, we're going to keep going and keep going and keep going. And I really and truly don't care if they come in here and cut my fool head off for doing what I'm doing, because I know one thing. When Martin Luther King was protesting, when Martin Luther King was just talking about civil rights and human rights, nobody cared because he was no threat. But no sooner than Martin Luther King said, okay, it's time to boycott, then they decided to take Brother Martin Luther King out. And guess what? Martin Luther King was ready for that. I'm ready for that. And each and every last so-called organizer that's inside the prison system, we are all ready for that, man. And when the system starts being defeated by not only us, but society, that's when we're going to be successful, because society has to start changing the way they think, just like we have to start changing the way we thought in order to get us where we're at. I am not one of those that's going to sit there and say we got to end prisons. We got to end prisons. I'm in prison. I know that there's individuals in prison that deserve to be where they're at. But I'm not going to sit there and say that them individuals don't deserve a second chance, because they are capable of changing. I don't care how horrific the crime is, but they can change. And that's our duty as brothers and sisters, to pick each other up and help correct these individuals. I'd hate to think that if you're in a car wreck and I come by your car while you're in a car wreck, that I would ignore you when you needed help. And I'm going to say this, Brother Bob, because I say this a lot, man. Always remember as the investor that I have no law whatsoever that I have to follow when I get out that says that I cannot move next door to you. And guess what? My question to you as an investor in what's going on through the judicial and the prison systems right now is, what kind of individual do you want me to be? Would you like me to be that rehabilitated individual? And by the way, I want people to look up word rehabilitate and tell me what it means. But do you want me to be that rehabilitated individual? Or would you rather me be that morphed animal that I had to adapt as survival instincts into prison? Because I would hate to think that if I was that animal, that I wouldn't be sitting there on my porch swing watching you, your wife, your children, or whatever, and trying to figure out a way to become that predator once again. And don't forget the Eighth Amendment. Jesse, brother, you ain't lied about that. And we're going to talk about that Eighth Amendment. Well, we can get off into that right there. People would have to eat their words talking about what they deserve, what they get when they go to prison. Well, I like for people to start looking at the Eighth Amendment for what it is. That is a law that requires that humane treatment be done to these individuals inside these prison systems. They not be treated inhumanely. They not have to suffer their certain conditions because they're supposed to be looked at as human beings, supposed to be, but we're not. What do you think about
the Eighth Amendment? Cruel and unusual punishment.
Ain't no right. doubt. Cruel and unusual punishment.
Cruel and unusual punishment. And I'll give you a couple examples of what cruel and unusual punishment looks like. Let's take Texas, for example. Now, in the state of Texas, inmates most of the time are given what's called an aggravated or non-aggravated felony. And that will determine how early they get off of parole. So what these inmates are forced to do, and now mind you, if... What Brother Swift is talking about as far as the 13th Amendment is concerned is he's very right. We are slaves. And here's why we're slaves, because when we're put in these prisons, we're forced to work. If we don't work, then we're punished. Like any bad acting slave is punished. They put us in chains and they whip us with loss of privileges, locked up in a cell 23 hours a day, restricted commissary, restricted visits, and all that stuff like that. That's basically whipping. They might as well take leather whips out and just tie us to a tree and whip us, because that's what it is. You got in the state of Texas, and anybody could look this up and look at it and know that it's true, you've got about 100 inmates all chained together like cattle out on the side of some highway somewhere with some giant cowboy sitting on a horse with a shotgun in his hand, forcing them to make big rocks into little rocks or to, you know, pick up weeds or anything like that. And they're not being paid for their work. So what is that? Ask yourselves, what kind of labor requires somebody to work for free? That's a slave. That's a slave does that. And if they're being chained together in them conditions, in them circumstances, out in the blazing sun, dying and roasting in the heat, that's slave labor right there. And I'm sure Bob's aware of what Swift is aware of. What goes on in Texas is they got those chain gangs, and they got them in other states in the South. They might even have them in Alabama. I'm not really sure.
We used to,
but California. California shut down the chain gangs because they ruled them to be unconstitutional because they violate the Eighth Amendment. And I'm glad that you brought up the Eighth Amendment in here. The gentleman that brought up the Eighth Amendment, or the young lady, Lili, that brought up the Eighth Amendment, because it is a violation. I'll tell you what else, upon release, it's a violation of the Eighth Amendment. In many, many different states, it is okay for somebody, like if I'm going to go get an apartment or a house, now they're asking, in certain places, they're asking, have you ever been convicted of a felony on a rental agreement? And what they'll do is they'll do a background check on you. If you got a felony, you can't even get rent in certain apartments. You're being forced to live into impoverished neighborhoods, high crime neighborhoods, because those are the only places you can get a residence. I can't go into the rich white part of town and rent some property because they're going to ask me if I'm a felon. They're going to run a background check and they're going to refuse me housing in some of these places, forcing me to go live in an impoverished neighborhood. And that's where, you know, what people say, they try to get away from their surroundings, their circumstances that led them to crime. They're basically forcing everybody to go back into the places that they came from. And that's where all the fellas are at. That's where all the drugs are at. That's where everything's going on and popping. So they do this, and it's wrong. And you in society as investors, again, and I want to keep beating the dead horse on that because I want to win that point home and get you guys all thinking that you're investors. So you could change that. You could demand that it's unconstitutional and illegal for anybody on or anybody in a property holder to ask you if you've been convicted of a felony in order to prevent you from getting housing anywhere else. That's not even right in any way. I don't know how anybody thinks that's right or cool. You know, it's wrong.
Right. I mean, you're not even giving an individual a chance to prove or not whether or not they have been rehabilitated or changed the way they think, but you're automatically judging. And, you know, that goes back to the statement of rehabilitate. Brother Bob, I'm going to break this point down on rehabilitation. Rehabilitate. When you look at rehabilitate on a medical standpoint, and let's just say I break my arm and I'm going to need rehabilitation of my arm in order to get my arm working back to the same way it was before I broke it. Now, the whole point and the whole goal in rehabilitation is to get it 100% functional the same way it was before I broke it and before it became, like you said earlier, before it became broken. But anyhow, it is successful once I can be able to lift the same amount of weight. I can be able to move it the same way. I can be able to operate the same way, do the same functions daily the same way. It is considered a successful rehabilitation. Now, let's look at rehabilitation as a human being once they become convicted of a felony. Before they became convicted of a felony, what kind of condition were they in before they became that criminal? Now, they was a tax-paying citizen. They was somebody who could go live in an apartment without being a background check or being told they couldn't go live there, or they could go to college and become a doctor or a lawyer. They could even become the president of the United States. They could own a firearm. They could vote. They could do all these things. But no sooner than they're released from prison, they are restricted from doing all of these things except for very few. In some states, yeah, they're allowing people to vote again. But you know what? In most states, they do not want you to vote again. And my issue about that right there is this. How can I be truly 100% rehabilitated if I have to work as a firefighter in the state of California, but yet when I'm released from prison, I can't go work as a firefighter no more because I'm an ex-felon? If I'm in prison and I decide I'm going to be a jailhouse lawyer while I'm in prison, but when I get out, I can't become a lawyer because I'm an ex-felon or I'm a felon. How in the world is that true rehabilitation? And when are we going to get past the facts that rehabilitation no longer exists? When are we going to reach that fact? Not get past it, but when are we going to reach that fact that it no longer exists? Somebody lost connection. Bob, you still there? Hello?
Hello, hello, hello.
Can anybody, am I being heard? Somebody talk to me.
Can you guys hear me?
I can hear you, but can you hear me? Are you there? Are you there, Bob?
I can't hear you, so I'm gonna log off real quick and come back on, Swift. I'm gonna come right back.
All right.
I can't hear you guys.
All right. Let's see if we can get him back on here. Yes. Okay. We was having some kind of difficulties where he couldn't hear, and I don't know, he lost connection or what. Podcast or this video live. Because I actually think this video, man, and I appreciate Bob coming in on this.
I can hear you guys now. I'm back.
There are you. Can you hear me, bro?
Yeah, I can hear you,
man. I don't know where you lost me at.
Something happened with my connection, and everything turned off for a second. But I'm back.
Yeah, we had you on there. We could hear you, but you just couldn't hear me, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the patience. Sorry, everyone. I don't know what happened. I lost some kind of connection or something, and everything went dark for a second.
But what I was talking about, Brother Bob, was how people have a false understanding of what true rehabilitation is for us, as for those who are confined inside the prison system, and what it actually means to actually be truly rehabilitated. And I use the example for the brothers and sisters who fight fires out there in California, not just California, but Georgia as well, and other states. But yes, once they're released, they're not allowed to fight fires no more. But at the same time, they're not receiving nothing but, you know, cents on a dollar if they get that paid that while they're doing what they're doing. And that is true slave labor, like as you were pointing out a while ago.
Yep. Yeah, everybody in there, if they're going to work, they should be compensated for their work. I also believe,
you know, let me stop you right there and ask you this right here. Talking about the compensation. If you was compensated while you was in prison for what you did while you was in prison, how much money do you think you would have had built up once you was released?
Quite a lot. I mean, you would have enough to reestablish yourself in society, and there's nothing wrong with that. And a lot of people think, well, why should they get a foot up like that, and we don't get a foot up like that? Well, let me take you totally off topic to another group of people that are given a foot up. When we have refugees that come in from other war-torn countries and they're brought here to the United States, what a lot of people don't realize, they're not just dropped on the streets. They're given a home to live in. They're given money to get themselves started. A lot of them have a greater degree of access to business loans and such loans and stuff like that to get their lives together. They're helped as far as getting job placement and everything like that. And I'm not trying to compare apples to oranges, but if we have compassion in a situation like that for refugees that are from war-torn countries, and mind you, we don't know what these people's state of mind was when they left their country. I mean, there's a bunch of people come in. We don't know if they were ex-offenders in their own country or not. So it's kind of like, but we overlook a lot of that stuff. We think it's our human and our civic duty to help these people, you know, get away from the war-torn country and the impoverished conditions that they were in, to come here and the government, at the expense of the taxpayers, the investors, give them everything. You know, that's why a lot of these people are able to start businesses and thrive, because they're given that boost. Now, why is it that people that are getting out of prison are excluded from that boost? Because you got people that are like, well, they committed the crime, so they need to be punished forever. Okay, well, if we're going to have that thinking, then every single American in this country that owes a bank or a credit card debt or owes a payment on their car should never have good credit ever again, ever. Not in 7 years, not in 10 years, never. See the thinking? See how it's flawed? It's just like, you know, if you can't do right by your credit, then why should you ever have good credit again? But you're given the opportunity to have a clean slate after 7 years. Why is it that we can't have a clean slate after a period of time? You know, it shouldn't be an ongoing. The punishment stops the minute you leave the prison. You know, that's the punishment is that you were taken out of society to be corrected. So if you go back out into society, the punishment's supposed to stop. It's not up to the taxpayers or the people or the business owners and everyone else to continue the punishment cycle, because that's where we're failing at. And that's why recidivism is so damn high, because we don't stop the punishment cycle. We're okay with allowing refugees to come in here and get a boost and a foot and a step up, but our own people, our own brothers and sisters that are incarcerated in here. Because, I mean, most of us, I mean, we grew up in an environment of insanity. We grew up in an environment of where we watched our moms struggling to keep the roof over our head. We watched people, you know, dying in the streets of drugs. We were exposed to the gangs. We were exposed to the criminal lifestyle at an early age. So in essence, we were made victims of the conditions of society itself, that society, you know, hasn't taken any steps to correct, because everybody's become complacent. They rely on the police to do all their work, or they rely on the government to do everything for them, and they don't take the initiative to clean up their own cities, their own streets, their own families, you know, their own schools. And that's where we're failing at. Society is failing. And society is a direct result of what mass incarceration is, because it's a symptom of a greater problem. And that's you know, the way that people think in the world or in this country right now, with this, you know, lock them up and throw away the key, and when they get out, they should continue to suffer. Well, if you're going to continue to make us suffer when we get out, well, then if you have a credit card debt, you should never be allowed to have a credit card ever again. You should never be able to finance your home. You should never be able to get a car loan. You should never be able to any medical bills, nothing. Anytime you break the credit law by not paying back a creditor, then you should never be allowed to have credit again. See the insanity of it?
And there should never be a school loan forgiveness and all this and that. I agree with that 100%. But I want to touch on something too that Jesse Smith had brought up once before, man. And this right here ties into what you're saying, and as far as linking together, and I'm glad you brought it up with the refugees. But you take the way society itself looked at the treatment of so-called terrorists at Guantanamo Bay years ago, and society in America rose up about our prisoners that were taken in Guantanamo Bay, and they had a humanitarian issue with what was going on and called it torture, and called it inhumane, and said it must end. But yet at the same time, the American people have neglected looking at what's going on and are okay with what's going on inside of the prison system of their own people. I am your people. I am the one. I was your neighbor. I was who you knew. You did not know the individuals in Guantanamo Bay, but you had a problem with it. Am I saying that you're wrong to have a problem with that? No. I'm saying that you're wrong to not have a problem with what's going on right here in your own backyard. I do have a problem with that.
Yeah, I want to talk. Nikki just made a point about school loan forgiveness. Yeah, you're right. There is no forgiveness unless you're permanently disabled. But that's it. That's all, because that's a government loan, and you know the government don't forgive. But we're talking about individual creditors and stuff like that, where the law says
I can stand corrected on that.
Yeah.
And I can stand corrected on that, man. I spoke on that, and I appreciate you, Nikki, as far as correcting me on that. But, you know, the point is still to be made. And that might have been a bad example, but at the same time, I'm not even fixing to, you know, just focus on that. I hope our point was made on that aspect right there, man. Listen, Bob, man, I am pumped that you came on here and you have broke this down. Is there any other actual, you know, focal point that you want to touch on before we sign off?
I just want to inform all your listeners, thank you for tuning in, and thank you for you know, being woke to this problem right here, because, you know, it's a huge problem, and it requires an effort on all of our parts in order to change. You know, we're not talking, and nobody talking, like he said, not demanding microwave ovens and TVs and jacuzzis and stuff like that. Just want to be treated like human beings, and we want the prisons to, instead of using the word punishment, start investing in using the word therapy and therapeutic. Because in essence, everybody in prison is sick, and I don't really know like Swift's background, but I could tell you like this from my experience, that I would say 99% of the prison population across the board, every jurisdiction from the state to the feds, Everybody in there has suffered some level of abuse as a child, whether it be physical, mentally, sexually, or emotionally. And a lot of these things right there are what creates a criminal behavior, because they've been exposed to some form of programming from people in their society that basically has turned them away from being a rational thinking human being into somebody that's hurt on the inside. And in essence, everybody in there is hurting. And that's why I encourage all prisoners out there to start exploring themselves and to start voicing who they really are, to start making themselves more human in appearance, to start saying that, you know what, I was sexually abused as a child. You know, I was held against my will. And I could tell you that about myself. When I was 14 years old, I ran away from home, and I was sexually abused by people that held me against my will, you know. And I was emotionally and physically abused and emotionally abused growing up. We got bullies in the neighborhood. We got kids at school that treat you differently because you don't have the kind of clothes that they have or whatnot. And a lot of these factors are what creates a criminal mentality. And we need to start looking at it as therapy. We need to start being therapeutic, because punishment's not working. It hasn't been working for hundreds of years now. It hasn't done anything to solve problems or to reduce crime. Anytime they give you a statistic telling you that crime is reduced and crime rates are down, it's because, you know, people are in prison and the next generation are getting ready to come up and take their place. So it's like, that's why the crime, the curve goes up and down. The levels go up and down, because you take people out of society and put them in prisons, yeah, the crime rate's going to go down, but the next generation is going to come quickly to take their place, and then the crime goes back up. So it needs to be started looking at it as therapeutic when you start treating the symptoms and the conditions that cause people to act the way they do. And kill the 13th Amendment, because we didn't sign up to be slaves. We signed up to be, you know, to help us and to guide us to correct our thinking, not to become a slave to somebody's labor or whatnot, you know.
Well, listen, before somebody Kanye West you, bro, because I know exactly where you were going with it when you said kill the 13th Amendment. He means kill the exception clause in the 13th Amendment. Before somebody Kanye West, my brother, I'm not going to let you do that. But anyhow, listen, I'm going to go ahead and give a little background on Swift Justice, because a lot of people do ask all the time, man, who is Swift Justice? Who is he? And I don't take that as an ego booster. So I'm going to give a little background about what kind of crime Swift Justice is in prison on. Swift Justice is in prison on murder. Swift Justice is in prison on rape, sodomy, theft, drugs. Each and every statute of a crime that there is in any state of America, that's what Swift Justice is in on. I don't care who likes it and who don't like it. That's the face that I am. I am the face for each and every last individual who does not have a voice that's being heard right now. And I'm going to be that voice for them individuals. I don't care if you have an issue with a certain crime. I cannot have an issue with a certain crime. And trust me, I fight every day, daily, deep inside my soul with individuals that I know is guilty of a certain crime. But guess what? I cannot be their judge and sit there and take and be judge and jury of these individuals. And it's not your job anymore either, because they was before a judge and a jury once. And then they're going to be before a judge and a jury when they pass on to another life. So that's not my job. That's not your job. So that's who Swift Justice is, man. And I'm also them 10 million kids who have come in contact with the prison system through an incarcerated parent. And one thing that I am passionate about is stopping the school to prison pipeline. That is where they are starting. They are starting in our schools. And that is one of the reasons why I personally have gone forward in moving a campaign to bring in school supplies for children who have incarcerated parents. And these school supplies are given to these children by and from the incarcerated parent. That incarcerated parent might not walk over there and give it to the child, but guess what? When they receive these school supplies, what this is saying is mom or dad, whoever it is that is incarcerated, is pushing this child's education and not imprisonment. They want them to get educated. They want them to stay out of prison. So I ask each and every last one of our listeners to actually go on to our GoFundMe and actually give, or you can get with Jesse Smith or Naisha Jones or myself if you can contact me, and we'll give you information on how you can donate. But listen, one thing we are doing is we are actually expanding all over the United States right now, and I appreciate the brothers up in Maryland who have started a chapter of Unheard Voices OTCJ, and we are looking to expand even farther across America. I don't care if we infiltrate every state in the United States. That's what I'd like to see done, man. And I want you to know, just pat myself on the back, and I don't do this very often, Brother Bob. I'm going to pat myself on the back. Unheard Voices OTCJ is a nonprofit organization, 501c registered. You know who did that? That animal that's in some prison that nobody wants out of prison. Guess what? And my brother Jesse Smith points it out all the time, and I'm going to go ahead and repeat him because it's the truth. I care more about your kids than you do. If you're listening and you ain't thought to do what I'm doing, I care more about your kids than you do. I think it's time that y'all step up and start doing more than what I'm doing from prison. Yeah, I'm going to pat myself on the back one time for that. I'll probably never do it again, but it is what it is. Brother, yeah, the brother in New Mexico is next. Jesse Smith's going out there to New Mexico soon, and he's also going to infiltrate Georgia. And I want to give a special shout out to Kate Boakye over in Georgia and what she's doing. Man, I do give a special shout out. And then all of the brothers out there, man, listen, Bob, if we can connect and we can team up, I want to do that with you, all right?
Okay, man, I'll do everything I can on my end.
Man, I appreciate it. And you keep doing what you're doing and keep fighting, spreading the word. And I plan on trying to invite you in on another Facebook Live, man. We'll continue this conversation, all right?
All right, peace.
All right, man, peace.